Welcome to the CLS Experience. I'm your host, Craig Siegel. I'm a born and raised New Yorker who achieved success with multiple businesses, but I crave something deeper. So I dedicated myself to personal growth and transformation by revamping my mindset. I went from being unable to run a mile to conquering four marathons the following year. Now, I want to help others manufacture big breakthroughs of their own.
Have no plan B. You need to just have that plan A. That's your goal, that's your mission, and that you will live and breathe to make that happen. Because if there's a plan B, you know, you might get a little lazy, or, well, I can always fall back on this. Yeah, I always made sure there was no plan B.
On today's episode of the CLS Experience, we have a very special treat. He's been a professional wrestler for the last 15 years, traveling the world with the likes of WWE and now in AEW. He is the definition of perseverance, grit, and heart. He is my good friend, Matt Cardona. So for the audience that doesn't know, Matt and I actually grew up together. We went to middle school together, which is pretty cool. And ultimately, here we are about 20 years later, and we're both doing our dream job, what we absolutely love to do in life. Matt found it a lot sooner than I did. It took me a little bit, but here we are full circle, and I think that's pretty cool. Last time I spoke to you, you said that you were feeling as light and free as you felt in a very long time, a little bit less pressure from what was going on for a couple of years over there and also the situation, and now you're just feeling good, and you look absolutely unbelievable, buddy.
Well, thanks, man. I mean, there's only a couple things you can control in life, especially like in the wrestling business, right? You can't, you know, everyone wants to be the champion and win every match. That's not realistic, right?
Right.
So you got to control the things that you can control, like your physique or your gear or your attitude. Those are the only things that nobody can like make your body look like shit. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So you have the opportunity to look as good as you want to look, or, you know, with your gear, you know, make it look as cool or as colorful as, or as detailed or as dark as whatever you're going for, or your attitude, you know, like, you know, not just in wrestling, but in life, but I apply it to wrestling. Like I said, of course you want to be on every show. You want to win every match. You want to be that's not life.
No,
you know, there's ups and downs. So you have to be able to, you know, just accept what, you know, you don't have to like, you know, I'm not saying be complacent and not want more things, but in any situation, you can always want more, but be satisfied with what you do have.
And you are the prime example of controlling everything that you can. And like you said, some things are out of your control, but your physique is on absolute fire. In my personal opinion, you never look better. And also, you know, aside from us growing up together and being good friends, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on here is something that you can control is your mindset. And I personally believe that yours is second to none. You know, you didn't have the most conventional, so to speak, journey. It was interesting. There's ups and downs, just like all of us. And you bounce back and you're an absolute fire. And the mindset is what I absolutely love about you.
Well, I appreciate that, Craig. Thank you.
So let's start from the beginning, if you don't mind. You've really been overcoming adversity ever since you were young. When were you sick? Was that high school or middle school?
Yeah, so that was high school. I believe it was so long ago now, I might mess up the ages, but I was going into 10th grade where there was a tumor in my right foot. You know, as a little kid, you know, you don't really realize what's going on. You know, I saw this little lump on my foot and didn't really think anything of it until like my mom saw it at the beach, like, what is that? You know, like, of course, we got it checked out, you know, and had surgery and the biopsy, and you know, we found out it was a cancerous tumor, but they believed they had gotten it all, and that we didn't need any chemotherapy or anything like that, but to keep an eye on it. And the type of cancer it was, it would show up in the lungs if it were to spread anywhere. So I would get like a chest, you know, an MRI like every month. So a year or so went by, I was fine. And then 1 month, there was two tumors in one lung and one in the other. They caught it like as early as they possibly could.
Because you were checking it every month.
Because we were checking it. Because we knew if it was going to spread, that's where it would go.
Understood.
So it was like the following summer, going into 11th grade, is where, okay, well, now since they're in the lungs, which means, okay, it's in the blood.
Right.
Which means like I got it. You know what I'm saying? So it was at that point where we had to you know, start the chemotherapy, do the surgery on one of the lungs. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It sucked. It was a horrible, horrible time.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I mean, at the end of it, I overcame it, which is great. But going through it was, woof, it was bad. It was, yeah. It was rough.
I would say that that situation, correct me if I'm wrong, helped shaped you and become the man that you are today. Going through something like that at an early age and being able to overcome that, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And it sounds cliche, and I've said it before, but I really believe that, like, you know, I had this goal in mind. I always wanted to be a wrestler, you know, ever since I was a little kid.
Really? I never knew that. I'm kidding, buddy.
Yeah,
we were collecting wrestling figures when we were kids.
Sure. But like, I never, you know, grew out of it. And, you know, as a, you know, in kindergarten or whatever, oh, I want to be a wrestler. My parents are all for it. Right. And even maybe in middle school, but when it's the end of high school and you're applying to colleges and stuff like that, and I'm saying, well, I want to be a wrestler. You know, my mom was kind of like, well, you know, you're 160 pound skinny kid. I don't, you know, like she didn't really take it too seriously, especially, you know, when I was sick. And but in the back of my mind, I knew, as cliche as this sounds, like I need to overcome this because I need to be a wrestler. I need to fulfill my dream. So I can't let
fulfill your
this,
destiny,
you know, hold me down. I can't lose to this. I have to beat this.
That's awesome. And I'm really glad that you touch upon that because that's kind of where you and I. Well, I went to a different high school. We were in middle school together and we went to different high schools. So obviously we weren't as close at that point. So I was going to ask you, and I'm super excited to hear about how this kind of all came to fruition. So after you beat that and you conquered that, the health situation, where'd you go from there? How did you start to like even find out how to start training? Or at what point did you like, did you start to grow and like put on some weight and be like, yeah, this definitely makes sense?
Right. So once I was like free and clear of everything was probably like January of 2002. So we're in 11th grade at that time. So I missed that whole year of school. Like I could have went back in like March or so, but like I've been home. Why am I going to go back for 2 months?
Right.
This homeschool thing's great. I'm not going to go back for 2 months.
Right.
I'll go back next year.
That's it.
You know, so I was homeschooled and did, you know, did everything from home. But then it was like, okay, we got to get serious. So I remember I was too afraid to go into a gym and work out because I was a scrawny little kid. So I convinced my dad to get me one of those Bowflex things. Remember the Bowflex?
Of course. Right?
So, you know, I had the Bowflex.
And your dad was always into like training and working out, right?
Right. My dad always, my dad had gyms when I was a little kid. So I was always like in a gym, but like when I was like 5 years old, 6 years old. So you're not really working out.
Right.
So it wasn't until like then that, you know, he helped me, he taught me the right form and stuff like that, which is very, very important.
Because, yeah.
You know, if you're doing things the wrong way, you can get injured. And it's like,
absolutely.
He taught me from a very early age, like, it's not so much like how much weight you're throwing around. It's the form and stuff like that and what you're eating and the diet.
Oh, yeah. I learned that late in life. Yep.
Right. So then, you know, once I got to be a senior in high school, then I was a little more comfortable to sign up to my first gym and stuff like that. And I knew right away. Like,
so in the beginning, there was a little bit of a confidence issue just to get in there?
Or because, you know, I remember the gym as being a 5 or 6 year old looking at these huge guys.
Monsters.
You know, I hadn't been in there in so long.
Yeah.
And I was very skinny. You know, I was maybe just under 6 feet at the time, but I was relatively skinny, maybe 150, 160 pounds. So I was definitely, you don't want to be like, you know, I see these kids in the gym now and I give them credit. Like you could tell,
absolutely.
Like, they don't know what they're doing, but like, it's got to be intimidating.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You see these guys in the gym and
100%.
You're just there with a chicken with his head cut off, you know, just walking around doing random exercises. But it wasn't until like my senior year where I really pretty much sat my parents down and I said like, well, this is happening. I'm going to try wrestling. There was a school on Long Island and I said, hey, like, you know, I'll start my first year in college. I went to the Nassau Community College. And I'll go for you guys. If you want me to go get whatever
degree
I'll
yeah.
go. But I'm going to wrestling school. So that was a little deal we worked out. You know, like I'll go take these BS classes where like, listen, in school, I was not trying. I was drawing up logos, drawing up like wrestling gear designs. You know,
awesome.
I graduated from Nassau Community College with an associate's degree, like a liberal arts, but I was just doing it so my parents would pay for my wrestling school.
Of course.
You know, so that was the whole goal. Like, you know, a lot of my friends went away to school and they were doing the party and all that stuff. And like, did I miss out on that time of my life? Like, yes, because I was so obsessed with wrestling and making it. But I wouldn't trade it for the world.
No, that stuff gets old. What you did is remarkable, my man. That's awesome. So what is a wrestling school like? How does that go?
Right. So there's, of course, like the internet was big. So you can just Google, or I don't even know, maybe it was S. Jeeves at the time. Like, where's a wrestling school?
Oh my God, S. Jeeves? Yeah. What is the throwback? That's awesome.
Like, where's a wrestling school in New York on Long Island? And there were a couple, and there was one in Deer Park, Long Island. And the trainer was Mikey Whipwreck, who I recognize.
I know the name.
He was in ECW. He was in WCW. So at the time, he was just there with the school, like doing their shows, but he wasn't the head trainer. So there was I walked in there and I was very, very intimidated. And it was just this, like, if you saw from the outside, you wouldn't think it's a wrestling school. It looked like an abandoned, like, storage garage, you know, but they had a ring in there in the summertime, no AC, wintertime, no heat, you know, but that's awesome. What it was. But the previous years I was backyard wrestling, which, kids, don't try this at home. You know, it's essentially just having your own federations in your backyard, sure. Whether it be my house, we did it on the trampoline, or eventually I did it where it was on public access TV in like a real ring, but we were trained. It was super dangerous.
Any injuries?
No injuries for
Thank
me.
Thank God.
Luckily.
Good, good.
But once I got to this wrestling school, they had recognized me from doing the backyard wrestling on public access.
That's awesome.
No, but it was that awesome because they didn't appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? Because they're like, oh, here's one of these kids.
Kids. I understand.
So it took me a while to earn their respect and say, like, hey, I want this. I'm not playing around. And I think, you know, it's like, you know, I compare it to, you know, playing softball in a softball league with your friends. You know, some people do it as a little hobby. I'll do this once or twice a week. And then there's very few who are like, no, this is it, 7 days a week. I don't just, you know, think about wrestling the 2 hours I'm here on a Thursday night. It's 24/7. So I think there was a couple of us who really stood out.
This is so relatable to me starting this personal development, Cultivate Lasting Symphony things. I'm getting all the feelings right now because I know exactly what you mean. It's the mentality that, like, I would rather die than not give this everything I got and see where it goes.
100%. Because, like, you never want to live with a regret either. Like, oh, I wish I would have tried this, or I wish I would have worked harder. So if you give your all, you're not going to succeed in everything in life, right? You're just not. But if you try your hardest, you can live with yourself.
Absolutely. 100%. So then you started to earn these people's respect.
Yeah. So that's when, eventually that Mikey Whipwreck became like the trainer of the school. And then he, you know, since he'd been in the business for so long, he's able to spot, like, okay, who wants it? Who's just here to, like, bring their friends and family once a month to see them wrestle? You know what I'm saying? And he realized, and I didn't realize till years later, like, he'd invite me out to the diner, you know, after like practice. And I just thought, oh, it's cool. We're going out to eat. But he was really teaching me the business and like how to respect the business.
He saw something in you.
Right. And I didn't realize that till years later. I just thought we were getting, you know, a hamburger, but I didn't realize like those lessons were more important than learning a hammer lock at the
Understood.
School.
Understood. You know, yeah. Those are very valuable.
Right.
So did you meet any people there that were in the same position as you that you would later end up seeing once you got to the major big scene?
Well, I mean, one of them was definitely Brian Myers, who I was Zack Ryder in WWE. He was Curt Hawkins. We broke into WWE together. We have our Wrestling Figure podcast together now. But we met in wrestling school, and we hated each other.
I remember hearing that on one of your podcasts, and that surprised me.
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't grow up wanting to be a tag team wrestler. I don't think many people do. You want to be like the guy.
Sure.
And he definitely wanted to be as well. And we were he grew up in Glen Cove. So we grew up like 25 minutes apart, never knew each other, same age. We're both obsessed with wrestling. And then when we got to that school, we were each other's competition. You know, I'll never forget, like, one day it was like body slam day, and we just kept like slamming each other as hard as we could because, like, we were so pissed at each other. Like, we wanted to be the guy to shine. And eventually, I think it was Mikey Whipwreck who said, hey, you guys look alike. You're the same size, same age. Why don't we put you together as a team? And at first, we were totally against it. But then eventually, it paid off. And thank God we did become a team, because that's how we ended up getting signed to WWE, was as a team.
Also, something that you just said was very interesting. When I had success in multiple businesses, I would always try to find someone, even if, like, I would create this in my head just to find, like, a psychological competitive advantage, find someone and then put a target on the back. Like, I need to be better than this person on my way to the top. Seems like your guys' rivalry played to benefit both of you, because you guys both wanted to be better, be the best that you could do. And that probably enhanced your abilities and efforts.
Oh, 100%. And then I think it also brought us together When we did finally come together, the bond was there because we both realized, okay, this guy does want it as much as I do. You know, so we had that mutual respect as well.
So then from there, they put you guys into a tag team. You guys started to gel.
Yeah, we started to gel. And then also, I mean, this is pretty crazy, but we realized we were both 18-year-old kids who still, like, in hiding, collected wrestling figures. You know? So that, when we realized that, it was like, whoa, this
stars
guy.
Stars aligned.
Yeah, this guy. Okay, we got to go for this team now. And then it wasn't much later that we got a tryout with WWE and we got signed. I mean, we only were, you know, wrestling for less than 3 years before we got signed to WWE. So, were we ready? Absolutely not. But who's going to turn down an opportunity? No, no way.
You'll never be 100% ready.
No way. No way. And like we learned, you know, I feel like a lot of people in wrestling, they learn on like the independent scene and, you know, they hone their craft all over the world. We learned on television. We learned wrestling. You guys like The Undertaker, guys like Batista, you know, like we learned on the job.
That's tough.
You know? I wouldn't change that. I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm glad that we learned. Like I look back at some of my matches in WWE, my early ones, and it's like, oh my God, it's cringeworthy. I hate watching. I'm like, oh, this was bad. This is bad. But a lot of guys, when they're learning and they're messing up, they're doing it in some bingo hall. No one will ever see it. Doing it,
you know, on the grand stage. Yeah. You know? No, I understand that. That's a great point. You can't trade that because here you are. Look, they say competition breeds success. You're in the ring with some of the best in the world, Hall of Famers that have ever done it. I mean, what better way to learn? But like you said, you're right. Especially these days, people usually own their craft on these independent scenes or, you know, parking lots, right? And no one gets to see that. And, you know, they build that up. And by the time they get to WWE, but you guys were, you know, you got there pretty early in the process, which is unbelievable. What was your reaction when you first found out that you're being signed to WWE as a lifelong fan up until that point?
It's going to sound like, listen, like I am not someone who's overly positive. I feel like I have like almost taught myself how to be positive and like through repetition.
Yes.
I've kind of ingrained that in my mind. But with wrestling, I always felt like it was meant to be. So I just felt this was the next step. You go to wrestling school, you get signed. Okay, well, what's next? You know what I'm saying? Even when we got to WWE so early, I think when I'm actually on the main roster on television, I believe I was 21 years old.
Wow.
You know, so like I think the next year we were involved in the main event of WrestleMania. I think I was 22. So like I was thinking, okay, so you get signed.
With Edge and Taker?
Right, Edge and the Undertaker at the running out in the main event of WrestleMania. I think I was 22, maybe I was 23.
That's crazy.
In my mind, I'm like, all right, well, what's next? Maybe next year at WrestleMania it'll be Edge versus me versus Hawkins in a three way. Little did I know, I'd be way back at the bottom. But that's life.
That is life.
The ups and downs, roller coaster, and I'm so grateful for both. The highs are awesome, right? But it's so easy to love your job, whether it be wrestling, whatever you're doing, when things are great. But you need to love it when things suck.
Yes.
When you hit rock bottom.
Oh,
and that
yes.
way you can work your ass off to get to the next level. And when you get there, you'll appreciate it even more.
100%, buddy. 100%. And you really find yourself as a man or woman, you know, to the audience, whoever's listening, when you're going through some shit, for lack of better words. When, what's the expression? Calm waters never made a skilled sailor or something like that. You know, the moral of the story is you got to go through some stuff and you got to have obstacles and you got to be able to overcome that. And then that'll shape you and help you get ready for the ups. But, you know, that's crazy. That's awesome to be thrown in the fire like that so early. That's unbelievable. And just your confidence level at that point, I could tell just by you talking to me from the moment you were a little intimidated to walk into the gym to being signed by WWE, running out in the main event at 21 and you thinking to yourself, what's next? Just your confidence starting to gain momentum. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just like any other job. You're only going to get better if you surround yourself with people who are better. You know what I'm saying? So even like with the people you hang out with, you can't be hanging around with people who are like, you know, everyone has their friends, you know, who aren't, you know, I'm not saying everyone has to be these like very successful people in life, but you can't, you know, you always have to thrive to be better and
absolutely.
To surround people and learn from other people.
Yeah, no, I've had to cut people off in my life over the last few years that I still have love for. And in one sense, it's nothing personal, but like you said, you want to surround yourself with people that you can learn from and grow with. And that's exactly what you were doing. That's awesome.
Like you hear the expression, like you never want to be like the smartest person in the room.
Right.
You know, if you are, find another room.
Yep. And I believe that 100%. Yeah. So then from there, after that high of coming out in the main event, and correct me if I'm wrong, you got chokeslammed by The Undertaker.
That's right. Yeah.
Through a table or off the apron.
It's off the apron onto Hawkins. Or
I remember watching. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. Bananas. That's awesome. A little before that, you were involved with the storyline with Edge and your buddy, right?
Right. So we were brought up to WWE TV, and our name was I was Brett Major, he was Brian Major. We were the Major brothers. We
yes,
were
this, I remember
this fake brother tag team, and it was great that we were, you know, on the main roster, you know, on television, but we weren't really doing much. But we weren't really satisfied with that. We didn't want to just be there, and that's you'll hear that a lot from me throughout this interview. Or if you hear anything about my career, I didn't want to just be there. I didn't want to just be a guy on the list of people who were there. You
know, a spoke on the wheel.
Right. So we had this idea. At the time, Entourage was a huge show, and we were loving it on
Ari
HBO.
Gold.
Right. Right. So we wanted the Edge to be like the Vinny Chase, like the star.
Okay.
And we would be almost like his, like Turtle, but two turtles, like his little minions, his little boys. And we, you know, get him coffee or whatever. And he was coming back from an injury, and we kind of resembled him with like the long blonde hair.
Definitely so we had this resembled idea him.
That right. So we had this idea that we'd be like his guys. And we didn't know him at the time because he was out with an injury. So we presented the idea to him, and he actually loved it. And he didn't need us. You know, we needed him.
Sure.
But he wanted to help us out. And I think he was smart enough to realize like these guys, you know, can take the fall for me, take my beatings, and then I can walk out as a champ. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for him, I think we would have got let go from WWE in like 2007. But he gave
really?
Us that. 100% because it was very sink or swim at that time. Like if you weren't doing anything then, like they would just like let people go. And I think, you know, at the time, like 1 week we're in catering doing nothing, the next week we're helping Edge become the world champion. So it was like, thank God he came along and gave us the opportunity to wrestle guys like The Undertaker, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, Batista, you name them. It was all because of working with Edge.
That's awesome. And you're still close with him to this day, correct?
Very close to him. He's a super great guy. And now, you know, even his story, if you look it up online, like he was someone who had to retire with a neck injury and, you know, almost a decade off, has come back, best shape of his life. And
best shape
going.
Of his life by far.
Yeah.
That was awesome. At the Rumble, he came back.
Yeah.
That was great. So you guys worked with Edge for a little bit, had some big things going on, obviously, because Edge was in the main event picture. And then from there, what happened? Like, how did it fizzle out a little bit?
Well, you know, being with Edge was, you know, a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing because, you know, we were getting to wrestle all those guys I had mentioned, but it was a curse because, like, we didn't really have our own identity. We were just like the Edge guys,
typecasted.
Or the Edge heads.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. So Edge ended up getting hurt, and then we were just, you know,
in limbo.
We were the Edge heads. We were Zack Ryder and Hawkins, but nobody really knew who was who. You know what I'm saying? Oh, those are the Edge guys.
Yeah,
we were even like the tag team champions, but nobody cared. You know what I'm saying? Nobody cared.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. You know what I'm saying? So there was a draft that they do every year where they kind of split the roster, kind of like shuffle everything up. And I had been pitching for the longest time to be like this like annoying character, basically like the stereotypical Long Island like douchebag guy, like like Jersey Shore before it was Jersey Shore, like all those guys. Because I hated it, and I knew if I could make people hate me, like I could go out, you know, hang out with my friends and like, okay, look at this idiot at the bar. If I do what he's doing on TV, people will hate me.
It'd be polarizing.
You know? Right. And if in wrestling, if you are a bad guy, you want to be as hated as possible.
Absolutely.
It's a good thing. You know what I'm saying?
You got to get the heat, right?
Yes. You need to be hated. So I had been pitching for that, and luckily they let me run with it. They let me cut my hair. Be as, you know, ridiculous as possible.
Who is that? Like the writers and stuff like that?
Yes. The writers, they went for it. I wanted to be as different from Edge and Curt Hawkins as possible. So I cut my hair. I started wearing these like one-legged tights.
I remember.
Yeah. So I just wanted to stand out. So even if people didn't know my name was Zack Ryder, he's the guy with the one-legged tights, or he's the guy who says woo, woo, woo. I just wanted something that people would be like, who is this guy? He's definitely not that Edge guy, is he? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just separate yourself. Absolutely.
Exactly. And it was working out. It was great. And I was getting opportunities, and I was learning, and I was gaining confidence, which I think is very, very important. And things were working. And then after a couple of years, I was just kind of just there. Now, you know, people forgot I was the Edge head, which is great. But now I'm just the woo-woo-woo guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then after that was going on for a couple of years, it was time, okay, well, what am I going to do next to – you know, reinvent myself or at least raise my stock in the company.
So I want to stop you right there for a second. I was actually at, I think it was Survivor Series as a fan.
Yeah.
And it was the time around when The Rock came back to wrestling after his big hiatus when he, you know, became a juggernaut in Hollywood. And it was a tag match. Him, maybe in Cena versus, I want to say, R-Truth and The Miz.
Right. Yes.
Is that right?
That is right. Yeah.
Okay. The whole building was going bananas for you, buddy.
Right.
Everyone was going crazy. Obviously, so it's your hometown, but you had a ton of momentum.
Yes, because that's like November 2011. So in January or February 2011, that's when I kind of had enough of just being there again as this woo-woo guy. And I started a YouTube show. And at the time, I didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't have these great plans. But the plan was, let's start this little YouTube show. And let's try to create some buzz. And this buzz, it's either going to get me noticed and WWE is going to use me more on TV in a prominent role, or I'm going to be so controversial, they fire me and other companies will pick me up because there's so much buzz.
Were you nervous to do that without approaching them?
No, I was so frustrated that I needed to create an opportunity for myself.
I love that.
And I was either going to get noticed or fired.
I love that.
There was going to be buzz either way. Obviously, I wanted to keep my job.
Of course.
Obviously, you know, but if I got fired for the things I was saying and doing, then I would have buzz elsewhere.
I love that.
So that's what I was doing. And the more momentum it was picking up, the more confidence I was gaining. And I kept pushing the envelope even more, but never in like a negative way. I never wanted to come across bitter or negative. Everything would always kind of be like funny. So like in the wrestling business, for example, if someone's getting really popular, it's called getting over.
Yep.
Right. So one of the scenes on the show was me like literally climbing over
this
tall fence. Right. And someone's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to get over. So it was just a lot of stuff like that where like if
those
you got
are your
it,
ideas?
All my ideas.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So I think if I went about it in a negative way, like they're not doing anything to me, like nobody wants to see that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I was doing it in a funny way. And then I was incorporating characters from my real life, like my friends at home or my dad. And I think I was the first person to really mix. Because wrestling is so weird, right? Because on social media, even now, you know, you see my social media, I could be trash talking someone I'm wrestling next week. And then the next post could be a picture of me and my cats. It's just this weird dynamic, you know? Because like an actor isn't tweeting in character.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like wrestling is so weird when you think about it that way.
Yeah.
So I say, well, what if I kind of like mix these two together? What if I put my real life and my character in this one show? And it really took off. And then it kind of culminated at that Survivor Series you're talking about at Madison Square Garden. It was perfect because if that wasn't Madison Square Garden, I'm sure the crowd would have been loud, but not as loud as it would have been in New York City.
So did that carry over at all to the people that need to hear this in the back? To give you kind of the baton?
It did. So it's around that time that I'm finally started to get used on television more. I end up winning the United States title. I get into this this story with John Cena, who is, you know, even if you don't know wrestling, you know John Cena.
Sure.
So he's like the top guy. So things were really taking off. And then obviously things, you know, kind of sizzled out for a little bit. But it definitely made the company notice. And they had to do something with me. Just to shut the people up.
Yeah.
You were there. They just weren't stopping.
Absolutely, buddy. I was yelling for you too until I was blue in the face. But correct me if I'm wrong. A big part of the wrestling business that not a lot of the casual fans might know about is selling of merchandise and stuff of that nature. And you were near the top of the list at that point.
Yeah.
And is that accurate?
What was even crazier is like I was doing a lot of that without even being on TV. It was just from the YouTube show. So like it was, you know, the merchandise sales, the people being loud, people were bringing signs. And I was, you know, I was feeding into all of that. So for instance, I'd always be plugging the merch on the YouTube show, or if there were signs on TV, I would have it like screen grabbed and do like the signs of the week and show all the signs. So it was like, maybe if I bring a sign to the show, I could be on his TV show or his YouTube show.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to, you know, the fans were as big, if not a bigger part than my hard work. Cause without the fans, it would have been nothing.
Of course. And that's just like anything in entertainment or really anywhere. You know, you go as far as the fans and that's awesome. You created that bond and they were so loyal with you. And to this day, they still are.
100%. I mean, I do truly believe that's why I lasted so long in WWE. And even now to this day, wherever I go, they'll, those fans, they know what I did, you know what I'm saying? And they'll always support that. And, you know, even if, you know, in WWE, if I wasn't doing anything for a couple of months or a couple of years, anytime I got an opportunity where they could believe in me, they were right back there.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? So I thank them for that.
100%. Did you have a good relationship with Vince McMahon?
So I've talked about this before in the past too. I think at that time, I was still very intimidated by Vince McMahon, and still, you know, when things after that YouTube show, when things I saw were falling apart, in my career, where, like, you know, for instance, Kane, this big red monster with a mask, he was like, literally every week he was doing something to me, like choke slamming me
with
off
a wheelchair.
Pushing me off the stage in a wheelchair. And it was, you know, it was storyline, of course, but it was symbolic that, like, I was getting used less and less on television. You know, and I should have been man enough to just knock on Vince McMahon's door at the time and be like, hey, what's going on here? I've been busting my ass, one of the top merch sellers. And that's something I didn't do. So, like, you know, people online have always said, like, Zack Ryder was punished for going out on his own, blah, blah, blah. Listen, I didn't go up and ask Vince McMahon if that was the case. I didn't plead my case. So I don't blame anybody but myself for what ended up happening.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because I don't like sit and live in regret about it.
No.
But, like, I accept it and I move on.
Listen, I've been there before in business, and there's an expression now I say to this day that I had to learn, and it's that a closed mouth doesn't get fed. So if you want something, you got to ask. You just got to go for it.
Sure.
What about to this day? You guys have a relationship?
Yeah, so towards, like, the very end, like the last couple of years, I knew, like, okay, if you want something done, and this is something you learn, like, in any job, like, you learn what to do, what not to do. I learned if I wanted to get something done, whether the answer was yes or no, I had to go right to Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
No more emailing the writers,
right,
and pitching ideas to these writers. If you want something done, go to the man himself.
Correct.
And did he always listen to my idea? Yeah. Did it always happen? No. But at least I got a yes or no from him. As opposed to, like, wasting time with some writer, emailing back and forth, and then him never even, you know, did he even tell Vince the idea? Who knows?
Right. 100%.
So this way I just went right to Vince. And, you know, I do think a lot of good things happened because I went to Vince. And, you know, was it 2 years ago, right before WrestleMania, my partner and I, we were back together, Hawkins and I, and we had this idea for Hawkins to win. He was on this big losing streak. And
I remember.
And that's what put me back with him, that I was going to help him beat his losing streak. So every year at WrestleMania, they have this big Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And we went in there, we pitched that, like, he could win it, and then us two would be the final two, and I would almost sacrifice myself and let him win, get his big win. We were in MetLife, so kind of New York.
I was there.
You know, New York, New Jersey. Yeah. So he wasn't liking the idea, but, like, whatever. We presented it. All of a sudden, we're booked to wrestle the tag team champions at WrestleMania. Like, how did that happen? I believe it's because we went in there and showed initiative and just got in his head.
100%.
You know? Like, what about these guys?
100%.
You know? So I believe if we didn't go in there to pitch him winning the Battle Royal, that tag team match would have never happened. We would have never won the tag team titles at MetLife.
And by him, you mean Vince?
Vince, right.
See, look, I don't know Vince McMahon personally, but I could tell he's that type of cat that if you had the balls to go up there and approach him with something, you may not get the answer you're looking for, but that definitely goes a long way in terms of earning his respect, and it'll definitely stay in his head.
I don't know if it was, you know, he's like, ooh, we need someone to wrestle for tag team titles. What about those guys who just walked in? I don't know what it was, but it was just it was too much of a coincidence that we're not doing anything, that we walk in there and pitches one idea, and all of a sudden we're winning the tag team titles.
That's awesome. So you guys had a nice little run with that.
Yeah, I mean, that was great. Like, I had my WrestleMania moment a few years earlier when I won the Intercontinental title.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, that one was just
what a moment.
Pretty insane. Yeah. That was insane for so many reasons. My dad legitimately hopped over the guardrail and slid into the ring. Like, that was not part of the story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that
I didn't know.
All real. But it was cool for the tag team title one. It was like, all right, I had my moment. Now Brian is having his, and I'm still involved with it. And I have the best seat in the house. You know what I'm saying? So that was cool. 100%. On a different level.
I'm very selective and strict when using any types of products, period. However, the CLS experience is all about elevating your state and getting the mind right, as it is our biggest asset in life. Something I've incorporated into my life is CBD, specifically Sweat CBD. Just like this podcast, Sweat CBD is all about enhancing your state, designed to optimize your physical and mental well-being. I personally love their products, specifically the oil and the gummies. I've tried a few different CBD brands and products, and to me, this is the most natural feeling. I love their products and what the brand stands for. The founder of Sweat CBD is a dear friend of mine, and she's offering the entire audience, all the listeners, CLS Family and Universe, a special promo code. Enter CLSCBD at sweatcbd.com. Enjoy. I love you all.
Going backwards for a second, that match, the ladder match, which is one of the coolest things that I've seen, and I was so happy for you, buddy. You deserve it more than anybody, in my personal opinion. Wasn't someone like injured or something like that? Were you kind of a last second replacement to get into the match, or someone was injured, but you were in it automatically?
Yeah. So what happened was at the time, it's a long, complicated story, but at the time, WWE, they also have something called NXT, which is like their other brand. But at the time it was more like a developmental system, kind of where like it was still like around, but now it's on like USA. At the time, it wasn't that big of a deal. So they had an idea for me to go down and work with one of the younger guys and kind of form like a tag team. And like, I'll be honest, at first I was like, oh man, I don't want to do that. But then I'm like, you know what? There's an opportunity. I'll make it work. And for about a year, I was doing NXT, WWE. I was never home, literally never home, either like doing the NXT shows or doing WWE. But at that time, there was like this, you know, you always hear like this, the rumored lineups for shows. And there was going to be this ladder match at WrestleMania. And like, I was on the list. I'm like, how am I on the list? Like, I'm not really doing anything. I'm like, I thought it was cool. And then, of course, like the week later, I heard, oh, well, you're off the list. I'm like, well, at least I was considered. That was cool.
Yeah.
And someone who was in the match, it was on a Monday. He, I don't know if he broke his ankle or shattered his ankle or something bad.
Who was
it? Out. Neville. His name was Neville.
Oh, I remember. Okay.
And I knew, like, this is my in. This is my in. And the next day, they were taping SmackDown. And I made sure I'm going to go up to the first person that I see who has any authority and plead my case. And that's exactly
awesome,
what I did.
Buddy.
And I just, you know, you remember Road Dogg, right?
Yeah. Buddy, I'm a diehard wrestling fan. Let me be very clear right now. Just like you always were, I was too, except you actually became one, which is so cool. But I'm still to this day.
All right. So Road Dogg was very high on the creative team. And I just happened to run into him and I just stopped him. And I just pleaded my case. And I, you know, I don't remember exactly what I said. I was just speaking from the heart, basically saying, you know, it sucks that he got hurt. But if anyone's going to take his spot, it's me. I deserve it. I've been busting my ass. No one can do a better job, blah, 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 blah. And I guess one of the things I said, which I don't even remember saying, it wasn't a planned line, is that I never heard my music play at WrestleMania.
I remember
which
this
was,
becoming
which
a thing.
True, because anytime I was in something else, it was either in a weird tag match or something. It was never like me coming out by myself. And then he told me later in the day that when you said that to me, like that's what stuck with me. And I went and I pitched and I got you in.
That's awesome.
So, and that was all because I, you know, like you said, like I opened my mouth.
Yeah.
And I made sure that, you know, I at least gave him my all to get in there and tried and it paid off. And then just to be in that match was cool.
Oh, forget about it.
But to find out the win, I was like, holy shit.
And to touch on a closed mouth doesn't get fed, it's you can't lose what you don't have, right? If you don't have something, you can just keep doing what you're doing. But if you have the balls to go up and ask someone to get something, you never know. How long before the actual match and WrestleMania was this going on when all of a sudden there was a window for you?
So I believe I got put in the match like 2 weeks before.
Okay.
And then maybe it was – so WrestleMania was on a Sunday. Maybe it was like that Tuesday or Wednesday I found out like the plan was I was going to win it. And I was like, oh, my God.
A week before?
Like, yeah. So I'm thinking, oh, no, there's 5 days for this to change. That's all I'm thinking in my head, like, oh, my God, it's going to change. It's going to change. It's going to change. And then luckily it did it. And then I ended up winning the whole thing. And my dad was front row and legitimately hopped the barricade.
And
slid in the ring.
No one tried to stop him because they know who he is?
Nah, they know who he's around all the time. So luckily, if not, they would have tackled him or something.
Yeah. Now, knowing your pops, probably would have tossed someone to suplex them.
Yeah.
Dad's a big dude. That moment, buddy, that was – I mean, I felt that for real. Like, I felt that in my heart because to me, that was – sure, it's a milestone. Everyone wants that moment at WrestleMania. But for you, it was like – it was just all the whole journey kind of coming together, coming full circle. And here you are having your big moment, not only hearing your music but on the top of the ladder with your pops. What an unbelievable, priceless moment that I'm sure you'll never forget for the rest of your life.
Never forget. And it's funny because even like when I got the call this past April that I was released from WWE,
which was a blessing in disguise.
Oh my, 100% blessing in disguise. Like, thank God. I don't know if we need to go into that, but it's, thank God. But when I knew the call was coming, literally, first of all, I had to make the call because I got a text saying, please call me. Well, I know what's going on today, but I have this picture that this artist painted. It's of my dad and I hugging at WrestleMania with the Intercontinental title. I have it hung up in my house. So when I made that call, I was just looking at that picture and smiling like, this is fine. This is no big deal. You know, I had that night, and I'm not saying your whole life or whole career needs to be one moment. You should obviously thrive for more, but I was satisfied with what I had accomplished there. And that picture just kind of like symbolizes everything I had accomplished there.
Oh, yeah. But and for any kid growing up or anyone that's a diehard wrestling fan or they want to get into the business or even anyone that's just a casual fan, they would always dream of that particular moment. Just everything that how it went down, being on the ladder, right? Climbing the ladder to get the title with your pops at WrestleMania. That was unbelievable by anybody's standards. And like you said, you want to strive for even more. And I have no doubt that you will. I personally think that your best is yet to come, but that was truly awesome, my man. That made me so happy, and you deserve it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, Craig.
So that I would say that's probably your best moment, so to speak, in terms of emotion from your journey, right? Or maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it was even, you know, definitely best moment of my career and my life, because like you said, I was someone who had dreamt about a WrestleMania moment for so long, and I had been to WrestleManias before, but it was never about me. You know what I'm saying? So this was it was just a storybook moment. And most of it was real life. Like even, you know, I showed pictures before the match of me as a little kid with Razor Ramon, and the picture is me holding his Intercontinental title.
And then it was switched.
And then I said, after I walked through that curtain, I said, where, I knew he was in the building backstage. I said, where's Scott Hall? Where's Razor Ramon? And we took a picture and he's holding my Intercontinental title. So to see those pictures side by side, like this wasn't some storyline. Like someone didn't start writing this storyline in 1996. You know what I'm saying? This is real life. And that's what made it so special was the realness behind it.
Unbelievable. And I totally understand that. That's crazy. Maddie, have you ever been injured? Seriously?
Yeah, so I mean, wrestling is a crazy business, but like I have been injured one time with major surgery. Like my shoulders, you know, are all messed up, stuff like that. I've tweaked things here and there, tore a bicep here and there, but the only thing I ever really needed surgery on was in 2016, the end of 2016, shortly after I won that Intercontinental title. I ruptured my patella tendon, which is basically what holds your kneecap in place.
I'm familiar.
It just ripped apart, like Jesus. In a match. If you watch it, it's not this crazy fall. Nobody landed on it weird. I was just jumping up to do something, and it just, boom, exploded.
Sometimes those are how injuries happen, a little awkward. Nothing too crazy.
Yeah, so – and
did you know right away?
Right away. I knew right away. It was like excruciating pain. And luckily, it was like the very last thing in the match I was able to finish. So, like, you know, luckily we didn't have to end the match earlier or anything like that. We were able to just finish the match, but I knew right away, I had to get surgery.
When was that?
So that was late, maybe like December 2016.
Okay. So not so long ago.
Not so long ago. Yeah. So it was actually right as I was moving to, Florida? Orlando from New York. So I had lived in my house for about a week and like thinking like, all right, so I'll come down to Orlando. Like I'll be here for couple days out of the week, I'll be able to road the rest. But then like I blew up my knee right away. So I'm in this brand new house with like, I didn't have any friends down there. I didn't have like any furniture. And I'm like, oh shit, now I'm stuck here with this rehabbing. So it was a little rough period, but
sure,
you get through it, you know?
How long was the rehab physically?
So I wanted to get back. They said like 6 to 9 months. I wanted to make sure I was back in 6 months, and I was back in exactly 6 months. It was just one of those things. Like I hated just sitting around doing nothing. You know, I made sure I was always doing the rehab, going from the rehab to the gym, probably doing extra rehab, which probably wasn't the best idea. You know what I'm saying? But in my mind, I'm like, I can't just sit around doing nothing.
Yeah. You were doing what you could control.
Right.
What kind of toll does that take on you when your profession is to be physical and active? What kind of toll does that take on your mindset during that time?
I'll be the first to admit it was like definitely like a rude awakening for sure. Add that in with like the fact that I was in this new place with, you know, all my family and friends were back at home. And I thought, oh, I'll just be here for like a couple of days out of the week, but end up being there 7 days a week for 6 months, you know, rehabbing. It sucked. It was definitely, you know, definitely a down part. But eventually, you know, you just got to snap yourself out of it and realize like, okay, this is the situation. How can we make this better? How can we, you know, make the most of this and do what you can to better it and grow from it?
Yeah. And situations like that, you know, you're going to be emotional at first. I think any human being in the world would be. But once you come to terms with the reality of the situation, you make peace with it. And then, like you said, you do what you can. You tie up loose ends and you move forward to the best of your ability.
Right. I mean, like there's never a good time to get injured. Never. You know what I'm saying? So like the match I was winning, as I got hurt, was to become the number one contenders for the tag team titles. But that guy from NXT had finally got brought up, so we were finally going to do something as a team, and then my knee blows up. But there's never a good
time. Who is that, Mojo?
Mojo, yeah. So, like, there's never a good time to get injured.
No, of course not.
And so once I had, like, the week or so to feel bad about myself, I was like, okay,
yeah,
that's enough. Enough whining and crying. Let's
enough
go.
Pity. Self-pity.
Yeah, enough. Just kick your ass. Kick your own ass. And make sure that you're back in 6 months. And I was.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And for the most part, you know, you've been pretty blessed with not too many significant injuries compared to other people.
Only significant. Does my back hurt? Do my knees hurt? Do my shoulder? Yeah, of course. But luckily, knock on wood, no real significant injuries besides that. And that's just the nature of the beast. You know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, I've been wrestling since 2003, only needed surgery once. So.
That's
could have been a lot worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. Could definitely be a lot worse. I wanted to ask you, just circle back for 1 second. After you won the title at the ladder match at WrestleMania, did you have a moment backstage with Vince McMahon or Triple H or any of those guys where you could just tell, you know, they were super proud of you in your entire journey?
It's funny because now with like WWE, how they, you know, back in the day, everything was, you know, it's real. But now it's a show and there's cameras everywhere. You know what I'm saying? They do like behind the scene documentaries and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and in that moment, I didn't even remember this until I watched, there was this, this documentary they did on that whole WrestleMania. And after I walked through the curtain, I go up to Vince McMahon and I hug him. He hugs me back, but I'm going for the hug. And I say like, thank you for the opportunity, stuff like that. And that's something I didn't even remember until I watched it back on this documentary.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just a hell of a night. You know, to get the text from so many people, that had my family there. It was just one of those nights I'll never forget. And, if everything ended after that night, that would have been fine. You know what I'm saying? Like, it didn't, and we're still going forward.
Yeah.
But it was such a storybook night.
And I'm glad that you said that, you know, you're still going forward. I personally think, like I said earlier, you've never looked better. I think that I was going to say whether you know it or not, but obviously you do know it. Subconsciously, you have all that weight off you now where you can just really thrive and you have some opportunity to be flexible. So now, where can people find you? What's going on in the new situation with AEW? And what's the game plan moving forward, so to speak?
Yeah, so right now the game plan is let's see where this world takes us, right? Because right now it's like with the pandemic, it's very – right now, if it was a normal – situation, normal world, I'd be doing like all independents all over the world, wrestling everywhere. Can't really do that right now. So I did about a month in AEW, just wrestled on their pay-per-view.
Is that something that you wanted to do if there was no pandemic?
Oh, I would love to wrestle around, go to like Japan. I've been to Japan with WWE, but I'd like to go there to like New Japan or just be there for like a couple weeks at a time and stuff like that. Because like, you know, since we got signed to WWE so early, I missed out on doing some of those fun independent shows, which I love to do.
Yeah.
But also now it's like we started our major wrestling figure podcast, and as ridiculous as it sounds, two 35-year-old men talking about wrestling figures, it's so much fun. And if anything, it's a creative outlet, you know? And it's a trip down memory lane because everyone remembers like that wrestling figure they had when they were a kid or even when they were in high school playing with them, whatever. So that just has been a lot of fun. And that's definitely my creative outlet. But I'm not done wrestling at all. I'm only 35. I've been wrestling for so long.
35 years young.
Right. I got into it so early. You know what I'm saying? So the best is yet to come. And now with the wrestling business booming like never before, so many different options, I'm very excited to see what happens. It's just so much fun now because – I'm a very creative person, and whether it fails or not, I love to be able to at least try. So now there's nobody, you know, legally saying, well, you can't do this. You know, now I can do whatever I want. I can put out a t-shirt design right now. It could sell one shirt. Who cares? Or it could sell 1,000. That I love being able to just try and throw things against the wall. And that's how you learn. That's how you grow, whether it be wrestling or anything in life. If you don't try, then how do you know if it's going to take off or not?
Absolutely, buddy. And it's, you know, when I started this CLS venture, I still have a business, but I was going, this is like the stars aligned for me. And I said to myself, I'm going to make this. I even spoke to you kind of early on in the process. I told you, my man, I'm going straight to the moon with this. I'm going to give this thing every single thing I got. It's like you said earlier in the podcast. It's not like you show up for 2 hours and then when you're not there, you're not thinking about it. I'm thinking about this 20 hours a day. The only time, you know, when I'm not sleeping, I'm all about this. So I 100% understand where you're coming from. And I also feel free and light right now. I'm just super excited about the future. And I definitely were on the same page with that. You mentioned the wrestling figures. So I forget who. Someone reached out to me maybe about a year or two ago. And they're like, yo, Craig, you were plugged in a podcast with Matt Cardona. I was like, really? I was like, really? They're like, yeah, something about a sick wrestling figure that you had that he couldn't believe that he saw at your house. You remember the story?
I do. I'll never forget. It was this Macho Man. It's very nerdy, but there was a Macho King that also
said
Macho Man on the butt. And you had the Macho Man. I was like, what? What is this? I had no idea it existed.
I had the Macho Man and you thought it was only Macho King?
Yes, yes. Because it's an identical figure, except it says man on the butt. But like if you were just buying it as a kid in the package, you would have no idea. Like, could you only see the front?
Right.
So I never got it because it didn't come with the crown and the scepter. So I was like, well, why do I need this without the crown and the scepter? Turns out because it says Macho Man on the butt.
Your mind was blown.
And you had it. It blew my mind. Yeah.
I remember that, buddy. I remember you used to have the cool, shady stores that I didn't know about get wrestling figures. Like not the Toys R Us's of the world. Like the shady like toy stores.
Yeah, it's like comic book stores and flea markets, all these like weird stores. Yeah.
Yes. So you kept this passion going to today.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, in high school and probably early on in college, like I wasn't like, hey guys, I collect wrestling figures. You know, I'd go to Toys R Us and ask for that gift receipt. I didn't want that cashier knowing these were for me. You know what I'm saying? But then, once I got into wrestling and I was, you know, I started learning that if you really want to be yourself and really, you know, really shine, you got to stop caring what people think about you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying you need to, you know, obviously people who are important to you care what they think, but don't care what these strangers think or people who mean nothing to you. So I was just being me. And that's why with this wrestling figure stuff, like even in the wrestling culture, like there's no way when I first came into the locker room, like I'd be like, hey, Undertaker, look at this sick ring I just picked up. Yeah, they'd kick me out. But
that's
times
awesome.
Have changed. Like the culture, not just in this wrestling business, but in the world has changed. Like if you watch like 40-year-old Virgin, the guy is a legit loser. He's a virgin and he has these cases of toys. I have the same cases. I'm not a virgin. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know, anything like Comic Cons are so popular, or people are making a living off playing video games, or you know, it's just the next thing I think that's going to be accepted culturally. Because what's the big deal at the end of the day?
You're being you, you're being your true self, and you're being authentic. And I think that's a lot of part of your charm. And that's why you have such a big following, even though, like you said earlier on, you know, sometimes you wouldn't be on TV for quite some time. But the moment you were back, the audience just like that gravitated towards you. And I think it's because they respect that you are who you are and you embrace that. And I love the fact that you're not shy about that. You love all that stuff. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're a big Star Wars guy too.
100%. I think you just nailed it right on the head. Like authenticity and transparency, I think is key. You know, people can see through the bullshit. It's 2020, social media. Like they know when you're bullshit. And I told you when I'm watching your stuff, I'm like, this guy really cares. He really wants it. You can just tell.
I appreciate that.
You can tell. I think that people now are a lot smarter than they were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Now they've seen it all.
100%. So
they can tell who's authentic, you know, and who really believes and who's really passionate. And the Star Wars stuff, like, hell yeah. I got, you ever see, where this Han Solo in carbonite? I have that in, when you first walk in my house, it's this Han Solo in carbonite statue. My fiance hates it, but I love it. I say it's art.
It is art. That's awesome. Real quickly, what did you think about the last one that the most recent one to come out to tie up the whole, I guess, saga?
Listen, I love that Star Wars is still around. Like you could walk into a Target or Walmart and buy a Star Wars shirt or a toy. Or now at the Disney World, Disneyland, there's whole Star Wars parks. I mean, this was kind of a dead brand in the early 90s, and now it's back and better than ever.
When Disney bought it.
I will never complain about new movies. Was I the biggest fan of the last two?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah.
But it's better than not having them at all. You know, sometimes Agreed. You got to appreciate what you get.
100%.
You know? You can always get more, or have more, or want more. But sometimes sit back, relax, but you know what? I have this, or
yeah.
I had this, or I did that.
Yeah.
You know, and appreciate what you do have. I think being grateful, and one of the things that Hawkins and I were pitching to the writers, even we pitched to Vince too before we got let go, is we wanted to be bad guys, heels, but be like over the top grateful and call it the gratitude era.
Wow.
And be like, we're so grateful that we've been here for 10 years. I'd just be like over the top where people were like annoyed by it. But I think eventually
– I think that would have resonated.
Like got behind it.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Gratitude.
Because I think so, not just in wrestling, but so many people are so like down and like poor me and like I wish I had that or I wish I was like this person. Like take a step back.
Buddy,
and,
I just made a video about this the other day. I can't even believe you're saying this. We're on the same page. Literally, people are walking around like waking up in the morning is a chore and not a blessing. You should be right. So lucky every day to wake up. Instead of I have to work out today, I get to work out today. I right. get to go to work. I get to go see a Star Wars movie. You're 100% right. Gratitude will change your whole perspective.
Right. And a lot of this stuff is your perspective. And you know this better than anybody. It's like you have to teach yourself these things. You know, especially for me. So I was never an overly positive person. And people, you know, they hear me in interviews, oh my God, you're so positive. Well, a lot of it is self-taught.
Yeah.
And there's way more learning to do. I haven't even like scratched the surface. But you know, it's little like tips and tricks that you could pick up and strategies you can learn from reading certain books or watching certain social medias or listening to like a podcast like this. You know, like every day, like I wake up before I get out of bed, I list, you know, some things I'm grateful for and some goals just to get my mind in a positive, you know, positive way. You know, even if I'm too tired or whatever, so I'm grateful for this. I'm not listing 50 things, but just a little bit to 100%. Get me going. You know, even if it's five things.
Gives you positive momentum.
Yeah, or just five things that I'm grateful for. Or even like, okay, here's three things I want to get done today. Whether it could be the most BS things, like mail out these packages. But if I get these three things done, like, okay, I accomplished these three little goals for the day. You know,
Understood.
And momentum, build momentum is very important.
Buddy, I agree 100%. I'm so happy that you brought that up. I do the same thing every morning. You know, I practice my gratitude and I say what I'm grateful for. And it just changes your entire perspective going through life, you know. You and me specifically, we've been through quite the journey, right? It doesn't go like most people's don't, but it doesn't go like this. It goes like this, the ups and the downs. And you come to a point where, you know, you learn a lot in life. And one of the things is just be grateful for everything that you do have, not necessarily for what you don't have. It changes the whole course and perspective of your life.
Yeah. And I don't think that's us, you know, advocating, you know, just being like complacent.
No.
You still want to set goals, but be grateful for what you do have along the way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And you don't let the little things bother you maybe so much anymore.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, my man, in my personal opinion, I think I said earlier, you're in the best shape you've ever been in. What's your secret? Because right now we're in a pandemic. A lot of gyms are closed and you're coming back looking stronger than ever. What's your routine? What's your nutrition plan?
That pandemic, it really kicked my ass in the beginning because I had nothing equipment wise at my house and all the gyms were closed. I eventually, you know, I had to buy some like Bowflex dumbbells off eBay. I got like a pull up bar. So I was, you know, at one point, I just had these bands that I had in my wrestling gear bag that I used to pump up with before shows. That's all I had. So I was like wrapping around like trees in my backyard, like just do whatever I could. But for me, I think, you know, consistency is key. You know what I'm saying? 100%. Like, do I wake up every day and want to go to the gym? Absolutely not. No way. Like very rarely I'm like, I can't wait to go work out for 2 hours. But you got to do it. And once you do it, it becomes routine. It's part of my day.
You condition yourself.
It's like I eat, I take a shower, I go to the gym. It's like no matter what I'm doing that day, that's just part of the routine that's in it. And it's all, like you said, just conditioned into my brain, into my DNA that, okay, the gym is just a part of the day. And, you know, I eat very clean. Do I cheat? 100%. But for me, I don't have a cheat day. Like Sunday is not my cheat day. I cheat when I want to cheat. If I want to get chicken parm tonight, I'll eat that chicken parm.
Chicken parm tomorrow, it is.
Tomorrow, I'm going to kick my ass in that gym.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to eat chicken parm tomorrow. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm the same way.
I think there's the whole like diet, like you need like a lifestyle,
yes,
not a diet.
Correct.
You need something you can maintain forever. If I was going, if I was like, hey, I'm going to do a bodybuilding show, I'm sure my diet would be a lot different. I'd be trying to dial in for whatever, 12 weeks or whatever it takes. But you can't live like that every day of the year.
Short lived.
No way.
It's like those diet plans when you try to fit it, like a woman's trying to fit into a dress. Sure, 30 days. And then what happens after? You probably end up going backwards. It's a lifestyle. 100% agree with you.
Or these people who, like, I'm not going to eat any carbs forever?
Right.
What happens? Okay, you're not going to eat carbs for 2 weeks or a month. And then what? You start eating carbs. Then what's going to happen?
Yeah. 100%.
You got to find that common ground and to be able to make it a lifestyle.
Find what works for you.
Time. It's not easy.
No, it requires a lot of discipline.
Still learning.
Likewise.
Yeah, oh my God, so much discipline. And I'm still learning. I'm still tweaking. You know, I just switched something up in my workouts where now, like, I was doing chest one day, arms another day. I was doing that forever. And I just switched it up where I'm doing everything twice a week or twice every, like, 8 days. Because I feel like, all right, you know, I've been doing this for so long. Like, what if you take, like, a day off? What are you going to do, like, shoulders once every 10 days? I don't think that's enough.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I try to do it like once every like – or twice every like 8 days or so. So I'll do, you know, legs twice a week or twice every 8 days, shoulders. I have to do shoulders by itself because my shoulders are messed up. But they'll do like back and biceps, chest and tries. I always change it up. If we do this interview again in 6 months, I'm sure I'll have a different workout plan.
That's good. You have to keep the body guessing. Keep yourself excited. Do you incorporate a lot of cardio?
I do just for like ring shape, but I'm trying to gain weight and I'm still a very hard gainer. So I don't do cardio to really like lose like body fat. Maybe I'll do like 20 minutes or so at the end, like whether it's on, it'll still kick my ass, like on an incline walking, like 15 incline, like speed 3, but no hands.
Yeah.
Sounds easy. Try doing it. No hands.
Right.
Tough.
That's awesome.
But I know you've been doing all that marathon stuff. That's not something I remember you into running in high school or anything like that.
No, I was never a runner. I always lifted weights. And, you know, for me, going to the gym and working out was always a priority. But I would just lift weights. I was much stockier. And I'm pretty short. So I had that stocky build. And then I got into running about 2 years ago. And I figured out that a lot of it has to do with mindset and heart. And I got really into it. And then after the first mile, I was like, let's do a 5K. Now that we can run a mile without stopping. So I did a 5K 30 days later. And then from there, let's try the marathon. And then I ended up running 4 that next year. So now I'm a little bit hooked.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's a lot of fun. Keeps you in great shape. Melts body fat. And it's good for your mind.
Absolutely. It's all mental for sure. Even lifting weights. Even the 20 minutes I'm doing, by 15, of course I want to quit.
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine when you're doing everything that you're doing. It's all mental. It has to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get that voice in your head just like anything else, and then you tell it to beat it, and then you keep doing as you were.
Right.
I want to tell you, my man, you know, I personally think you're the definition of perseverance, grit, heart, you know, from your battle with the cancer in the beginning to you being so laser focused on your moonshot of a goal, which was to be a professional wrestler and land in the WWE. And you did that, and you let absolutely nothing stop you and stand in your way. I admire you. I think you're on absolute fire. I appreciate that. I think you're a role model to all young kids coming up, whether they want to be a professional wrestler or they want to do anything. What you had in your head, your drive and your persistence and your just determination, I think that's unbelievable. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have you specifically as a guest on one of the earlier episodes of the CLS experience, aside from the fact that we grew up together and we're good friends, is because of everything I just said and your perseverance. And I think very, very positively that your best is yet to come. And I'm super excited for where you go from here.
Well, I appreciate that, Craig. And I'm excited for you and this podcast and this brand that you're building. Just from like one of the first couple of videos I saw you posting online, I'm like, oh, this guy's onto something. Now you get the podcast. So I know if you're passionate about something, you'll go for it. So good luck with everything, my man.
100%. I'm going to ask you a couple quick questions, one-word answers, just to top it off.
All right.
Let's have a little fun with that for the audience. Okay. So you're a pretty successful cat. Let me reframe. You're a very successful cat. What time do you go to bed and wake up in the morning?
So lately, I've been going to bed around like 1 and waking up around 8 or 9.
Okay. So you go to bed kind of late.
Yeah. Now, also keep in mind, I don't have like a job that I need to wake up early.
It's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? And typically, When I was on the road with WWE, I'd be going to sleep at like 4 or 5 in the morning because I'd be doing a show driving like 300 miles.
Yeah.
You know? So it's actually my fiance is like, babe, we need to go to bed because I'd be up all night because it's just like how I've been wired for the past 10 years. So, but yeah, I like to, you know, get everything in the morning. Like I like to wake up right away, eat breakfast. I'm someone who needs to eat before I work out, but I like to wake up, eat breakfast, do the gym and get that out of the way. So now the rest of the day could be for A, having fun or other things I need to do. But the gym for me is a priority. So I don't want to put it off. And luckily, I'm fortunate enough where that is part of my job is to look good. So if I'm home, like working out is part of my job and it's a main responsibility for me. It's not something I can or need to squeeze in an hour in between things.
Absolutely.
So I'm fortunate that I'm in that position, but that's one of my main priorities.
Okay. And also because you have a little bit more flexibility right now, you're probably going to bed a little bit later.
What about you? What's your schedule like?
I go to bed probably around 11. I wake up around 5, depending if I'm running in the morning or just working out. If I'm running, I'll wake up a little bit earlier. I like to get an edge and start the day early. Usually I would go to bed earlier, but lately, you know, the schedule's been a little whack, if you will. Who was your role model when you were growing up in the wrestling world?
Ooh, of course, you know, as a kid, I loved guys like Hogan and Macho Man, right? But it wasn't until guys like Edge and Christian and Chris Jericho, who were the quote-unquote smaller guys at the time, looking at them now, they're not small at all.
No.
But like compared to the guys at that time, they were smaller. And I thought to myself, well, if these guys can make it, you know, then I can make it. And it's super cool now that I've got to become friends with Edge, Christian, Jericho. Even, you know, it's so funny.
I immediately was
like,
just thinking law of attraction when you said that because I know now you're close with them.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. I was just telling this on the Wrestling Fever podcast on one of the past episodes. Like I, as a kid, have an 8x10 like from Edge, and it's like, you know, to Matt from Edge, right? And then I just did an autograph signing where it was a picture of me, Hawkins, and Edge, and like we're all three of us assigned it. So I made sure I have one for myself because now I have an 8x10 that Edge signed to me as a fan, and then one where
that's awesome.
We're signing it for a fan.
That's awesome.
So pretty cool. And stuff like that, I need to sometimes take a step back and be like, whoa, this is pretty cool. Because sometimes you're just caught in the moment. And you don't realize and you don't appreciate the things like that.
100%. You got to take a step back and just be present and definitely appreciate that. What advice, Maddie, would you give to a young kid coming up right now, whether it be a professional wrestler or anything, that wanted to pursue his or her dream, but they didn't necessarily know how to get there? Because you're a prime example of someone who chased their dream and conquered it.
I think you. This is going to sound horrible, and people might disagree, but have no plan B. You need to just have that plan A, and you need to. That's your goal. That's your mission, and that you will live and breathe to make that happen. Because if there's a plan B, you know you might get a little lazy, or well, I can always fall back on
safety
this.
Net.
Yeah, I always made sure there was no plan B. Like this is like I went to school to make my parents happy, but like that was it.
I love that.
You know
what
I'm saying? Like I didn't have like a degree in like something important to fall back on. I was doing BS classes. One class I took was circus arts. Like come on, literally circus arts.
Why you think that was going to be in your future?
Yeah, no, like that. I had no plan B. And I think if you want something bad enough, don't let anybody, whether it be you know a guidance counselor in school or your parents or a boyfriend or girlfriend, whoever, or your friends. You know how many people told me like I'm an idiot for trying this? And here's the thing, like I don't care about proving like doubters wrong, right? Especially in this time, I just want to prove like supporters right and people who believed in me right. And prove myself right. I'm not living to prove other people wrong. I think that's very important too. Live for yourself, not for doubters.
100%. And you know, there's a story that I used to read when I was coming up, and I was working in business on Wall Street, and it was basically this whole story about burn the ships. In other words, there's no way to retreat. We're going this way. This is what's happening, and that's it. There is no safety net. It reminds me of you, a Batman fan.
Yeah.
Remember the Dark Knight Rises when he has to make the jump out of the cave to go save the city from Bane? He does it without the rope. The reason he did that is so that there was no plan B. And that always stuck with me. So for you to say that really hits home. And I love that. My man, I love you so much, buddy. Thank you for taking the time. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
I told you we'd manufacture some magic. We delivered. And this is quite the experience for the audience. Tell the audience right now where they can find you. What are you up to? And where can they find you on social media and stuff like that?
Yeah, so on social media, on Twitter and Instagram, it's at the Matt Cardona. Also follow the Wrestling Figure Podcast if you want, at Major WF Pod. And you know, whether it be AEW on TNT or any other wrestling promotion, just keep your eye out because you know, I'm not done yet. So
I could definitely vouch for that. When is it on AEW?
AEW is Wednesdays on TNT.
Awesome. Keep up the great work, my man. I guarantee that your best is yet to come. You're on something. I'm so proud of you. Thank you for your time. And we'll chat soon. Love you very much, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Love you too.
Take care.
Later, man.
Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow me at Craig_CLS and the YouTube channel, Craig Siegel. The best is yet to come.